Our first case this morning is United States against Hartman. Counsel for the defense, you may proceed.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Major Kirk Cipriano, and I, along with Captain Paul LeBlanc, represent the appellant, sonar technician, submarine second class, Benjamin Hartman. Chief Judge Ackerman, with the court's permission, I would like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Granted.
This court should set aside as unconstitutional appellant's conviction under Article 125 of the Uniform Code of Military Justice for two reasons. First, the sexual conduct in question here is private rather than public. Therefore, it was protected by the Due Process Clause of the Constitution and the Supreme Court's interpretation of that clause in Lawrence v. Texas. Second, there's no military interest here that necessitates curtailing the interest provided by Lawrence v. Texas in the Due Process Clause. The test created by this court and this court's predecessor in United States v. Berry, United States v. Snyder, United States v. Izquierdo should not be applied to the constitutional question here. They were never designed for that purpose. They were designed specifically to determine whether or not conduct was prosecutable under Article 134 of the Constitution, or the Uniform Code of Military Justice, and therefore they're inapt for use here. Application of these
tests. Leaving aside the second prong and the asleep question, what, if any, effect does it have that all these people were members of the same boat crew?
Well, there could be a military
under prong three.
Under the military interest prong. Well, first of all, Your Honor, there's no indication of any effect at all. This court could speculate, however.
Does there have to be?
Yes, Your Honor, there has to be.
Does there have to be evidence of an effect?
There has to be evidence of a military interest that necessitates.
No, that's not right. You're talking a fact. What are you saying? Go ahead.
Sorry, Your Honor. There has to be evidence of a military interest under prong three.
Right, and doesn't the fact that they're all in the same boat crew and have to, you know, be at close quarters constantly as a matter of military duty bring it under prong three?
It could if it was proved by the government, Your Honor. Yes, there is.
You mean it's a matter of proof as to whether they're in the same boat crew?
Yes, Your Honor, and whether there's an effect on the particular military duties that they perform. Now, for example, United States versus Steyerwald, this court found by virtue of the United States Coast Guard's order that was in evidence in the stipulation of fact that prohibited sexual conduct, actually relationships at all between members of the same Coast Guard cutter, that would have been sufficient evidence. Now, nothing like that.
Now, your argument is critical, contingent on whether or not the information that came in on sentencing is considered in the context of determining whether there's a liberty interest or not.
Absolutely correct, yes.
Correct? Because the facts are quite different if you include the sentencing
Absolutely,
information.
Yes, sir.
So could you review your argument as to why the sentencing facts, which are admitted because they directly relate to the offense under 1001b-4, nonetheless are not considered when addressing whether there's a liberty interest in the context presented?
Yes, Your Honor. In the context of this case, in the as-applied challenge, the facts that make this conviction constitutional become essentially elements in the case because they are necessary to sustain the conviction. And that can be that comes from the United States Supreme Court's case law in Apprendi versus New Jersey, Blakely versus Washington.
That goes to what is proven beyond a reasonable doubt.
Yes,
now, if the appellant had sentences presented matter inconsistent during the sentencing, or if there was matter inconsistent during sentencing, would not that invalidate the plea?
Yes, Your Honor, it would under this
point. Okay, but it's nonetheless your view that the sentencing information is not relevant in determining the context, the constitutional context in which the liberty interest question is presented.
That's correct, Your Honor.
I still don't understand why.
The reason is that under the sentencing guideline cases, the court determined that any fact that increases the maximum punishment other than a prior conviction must be pleaded and proven beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, in this case, the fact that there's a military interest is what allows them to raise the quantum of punishment from no punishment to 5 years, Your Honor. Therefore, it is essentially necessary to be proved beyond a reasonable doubt. But in the context of a guilty plea, it would need to be pleaded to.
I see. So your argument is you convert it into a sentencing factor.
That's essentially what the government has done, yes, Your Honor. And in fact, that is the way they intentionally prosecuted this case. Now, the facts of the case strongly suggest that there was some reasonable doubt as to whether it was forcible or not. And therefore,
now, is it your view if the sentencing information comes in, then there is, under prong three, there is military concern here?
The military concern was never actually addressed beyond in the and the pre-sentencing, the pre-sentencing proceeding was never addressed, and the military part was never addressed.
Let me ask you this. Would it be your view that if you did consider the material in the sentencing stage, which included the fact that one of the two persons could no longer serve or chose not to or for some reason no longer was able to serve on the submarine crew, would that constitute a military factor under prong three of the Markham test? Understanding that in your view it's not on the table.
Yes, sir. It could. I mean, he's essentially saying that it had some effect on the military. If the sentencing, the pre-sentencing proceedings are allowed, and then clearly the forcible nature would then also potentially remove that. However, the quantum proof would still need to be proved beyond a reasonable doubt. But in the context of guilty plea, it would need to be admitted to. Simply having the military judge ask for and fill in the evidentiary void wouldn't correct the problem.
Counsel, was any evidence presented at trial, either during the trial or for purposes of Judge Baker's questions at the pre-sentencing hearing, showing that there was an order or regulation prohibiting sexual contact between members of this ship?
There's not, Your Honor. Because this was prior to the public conduct, it was protected under the Constitution of the United States.
Counsel, if we...
Go ahead. You state on page 8 that you recommend that the following test. This court should adopt the rule that conduct in public and not constitutionally protected. I can't read. I forgot my glasses. If it is conducted in such a place and under such circumstances that it is reasonably likely to be seen by others who would object to the viewing it. And is your argument there with the third party in the room that the third party was not likely to see it or would not have objected to it, or both?
Both, Your Honor. Unfortunately, as stated in the brief, the evidence on the record here is very scarce. That's to be generous. There's nothing that suggests that it was reasonably likely to be seen. And in fact, when this court...
And what is that based on, just to break down the arguments? Because the person was passed out or whatever?
He was passed out. The lower court described him as unconscious, Your Honor. And then he never did, in fact, wake up. So obviously the fact that it never occurred also gravitates towards that. However,
so the liberty interest then is defined by how drunk the third party is? I mean, really, how do we figure out, is that the right way to define a liberty interest?
Well, the liberty interest is whether it's private or not. The test is whether or not it is private is the question. The fact whether it's reasonably likely to be seen, and that's the test that exists under this here. Now, it's never been specifically applied by this court to the constitutional question that's presented here. So this court is obviously free to make whatever test it requires.
So that's point one, is that in your view it was not reasonably likely to be seen. What is your basis for saying that the person would not object to viewing it?
That's also an evidence. There's the evidentiary void where no one affirmatively said that, Your Honor, first of all. But there's also the fact that these sailors engage in the conduct in the first place. The context of the case, of course, arises. All three of them are in the Navy. They're subject to the Uniform Code of Military Justice, as well as the Navy's Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, which was in effect at this time. Therefore, the sexual participants are taking a huge, huge risk, in fact, risking their careers if they believe that it's either reasonably likely to be seen or that the third party is a whistleblower. So that fact alone suggests that they either made the determination that it was not reasonably likely to be seen, i.e., in this case, it was not reasonably likely he would wake up, or that if he did, he would not have objected. And there's no evidence about what he would have said. I mean, he might have woken up and said he would not care.
Is it, did you present that disjunctive or conjunctive?
I'm sorry, which the
disjunctive? Is it,
it's not reasonably likely to be seen.
Full stop, or not, or would not object. Full stop.
Correct, Your Honor. And again, it's an evidentiary void here in the case. I mean, the military judge had the opportunity to address this. In fact, it was addressed in the pretrial agreement, as well as in it was brought to his attention by the trial counsel, Your Honor. So, the question becomes: what should this court do when there's not sufficient facts to prove that the conviction is constitutional, as the facts in the case apply to the situation?
What about the fact that it took place under prong three, that it took place in the TVQ on base, in a place in which, while it's run like a hotel, you know, there's nonetheless, or at least there was in my day, something of an attenuated expectation of privacy. You know, you went into a VOQ, you never knew who'd be sleeping in the other bed. You know, somebody else would be sacked out in the other bed going somewhere tomorrow, just like you're going somewhere else tomorrow. What, if any, effect does that have?
Well, two things, Your Honor. I think that Your Honor's experience is not really reflected in the record necessarily. In this case, it appears that the partner in the sexual conduct had rented the room by himself, and other people were excluded at that point. So it is much more similar to a hotel room in this particular case than it is in a case where the TVQ room is given and other people may potentially get the keys to the room. Second of all, however, the privacy interest is not diminished by the fact that it occurs on base in a government-run TVQ room because they had the expectation that their room was for them, and they were all there consensually to put it on. And in addition, the idea that we would limit this merely limit the privacy right in this particular case, based off of the government owning the TVQ,
Well, it's more than the government owning the TVQ. It's the fact, the purpose of the thing. You know, in this case, the place was full of them. But that's not always the case.
Yes, Your Honor, correct. And the government may have an interest in limiting this particular type of conduct. However, it's not on the record, and to reach this would also reach, for example, visiting service members that were married that had rented the TVQ room as a personal room for the night. Or, and additionally, I mean, the privacy interest can be demonstrated by applying the Fourth Amendment case law. If, for example, this is going on and military police members burst through the door, observe the conduct, and they burst through the door without probable cause, it's very likely that a trial court would exclude that evidence based on the Fourth Amendment. So we can sort of see the privacy interest sort of overlap. I mean, the test of determining the privacy interest in this particular case sort of overlap. And the military has not enunciated any particular reason why the sexual conduct would need to be curtailed within the transient visitor's quarters. None of that is on the record. And potentially, if they were sharing rooms and that was the evidence, there would be a stronger case for that.
Counsel, did the military judge at any time inquire of the accused as to the significance of the presence of a third party in the room, or did the military judge merely ask about the presence of a third party?
He merely asked about the presence of a third
party. And did the military judge at any time ask about whether there were any military interests involved that would pertain to the criminality of the charged conduct in this case?
He did not, no, Your Honor.
Well, would there be a provident guilty plea in this case to a charge of sexual conduct in the presence of a third person?
Would there be a I think that the
in other words, could we find him guilty at this point of sexual conduct in the presence of a third person, or affirm a finding of guilty in that regard?
Well, an indecent acts charge was brought and it was withdrawn and dismissed as part of the
As I read the indecent acts charge, unless I've got something incorrect in front of me, he was not charged with indecent acts by engaging in that act in front of a third person. He was charged with indecent act in terms of his own activity. Is that not correct?
It is correct, Your Honor, yes. And the problem with the indecent acts charge would be that the 134 charge would have the terminal element, prejudice to more indecent, which is essentially the same element, very close. I don't want to say essentially the same because they're related, but it's so close, and it was not proven out.
So if you prevail in this case, can he now be charged in a further trial with indecent acts in front of a third person?
For consensual sodomy? There was no doubt.
No, I'm not talking about consensual sodomy. Can he be charged under either Article 120 or Article 134?
I believe that potentially there would be a due process. There would be a double jeopardy problem based on
why?
The conduct was known. In other words, all charges would need to be, according to the Uniform Code of Military Justice, the government has a duty to bring all known charges at the same time. Therefore, and they did their best.
Where does it say that the government has a duty to bring all known charges at the same time? My understanding is the government has an opportunity to bring all known charges at the same time.
That's correct, Ron. I thought that.
And where is that a due process issue?
Potentially, well, if he is not, if he has not been charged and not been subject to jeopardy, he could be tried.
Okay. Now, in Markham, the court expressly did not address the impact of the Markham factors in other situations. That is, the court said it was not addressing whether Article 125 would be constitutional if those factors are not met. It also expressly said it was not addressing the impact of 10 U.S.C. 654, the so-called Don't Ask, Don't Tell statute. As I read your brief, you seem to assume that you win if you can show that your case is not within the Markham factors. But Markham didn't say that. Markham left those two issues open. So could you please address both the constitutionality of Article 125 and the impact of 10 U.S.C. 654 on a case that's not within the Markham factors? That is, if we agree that that this situation does not come within either the second or third Markham factor.
Yes, Your Honor. The idea that the Don't Ask, Don't Tell, first of all, was sort of a congressional enunciation of a military interest, one that has since been repudiated. So in that particular case, had that been put into evidence, it could have affected the ability to prosecute in the particular case. However, that has been repudiated by Congress as a military interest. It was never put forth as a military interest.
What do you mean that's been repudiated? What's the status of that statute right now?
Well, it's repealed, and that law that repeals Don't Ask, Don't Tell is waiting constitutional action to congressional action to effectuate it. You know?
So it's not repealed at this time, is it?
No, Your Honor.
So what impact, if any, does that have on our decision right now? Do we treat it as a congressional enactment signed by the president of some statement of policy, or do we treat it as is stated expressly in the statute that language of 654 is still in effect?
Well, Your Honor is correct in saying that it's still in effect. However, the idea of Don't Ask, Don't Tell specifically talks about prosecution for discover acts, and it doesn't really address the question of whether or not it's constitutionally protected. Now, this court addressed that issue with Markham and said that, as applied, it could be unconstitutional in some cases. Now, it never, as Your Honor notes, it never said that it was per se unconstitutional when it was outside of Markham. So, however, Lawrence versus Texas does protect this particular kind of conduct. Lawrence versus Texas was decided as one of many cases in the substantive due process clause cases that were decided starting with Griswold versus Connecticut, which protect a person's right to make decisions. There's often termed personal autonomy.
So is this a fair summary of your answer, and please correct me if it's not, that we would in effect have to now decide that question that's left open in Markham, and that is whether Lawrence applies to the military in circumstances that don't fall within the three factors of the Markham test?
Yes, Your Honor, that's a fair summary.
Thank you.
I see my time is up, Your Honor.
Just summarizing, should we look at this, leaving aside the sentencing evidence, should we look at this as a case of fornication between two members of the armed forces?
I mean, essentially, yes, Your Honor. The idea being that the way that Lawrence protects the way that adults choose.
Well, you know, 50 years before Lawrence, fornication wasn't an offense under the code.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. Does Chiarito survive Lawrence and Markham?
I do not believe it does, Your Honor. No, I think Chiarito needs to take into account whether or not this third person, because potentially Lawrence protects, if this court decides that Lawrence protects more than just two people conducting activity, then Chiarito does not survive, Your Honor.
Thank you, Counsel. You have a further opportunity on rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel for the government.
Counsel, before you begin, so I don't interrupt you, we asked the CCA essentially to tell us whether it was reasonably likely that a third person would have observed the activity, and the CCA, rather than answering that question, answered it in sort of a fudge manner, saying, had he been conscious, without asking the question, which is what was the likelihood that he was conscious that he would wake up. In light of that, you know, which side do we fall on? I mean, do we assume in favor of the appellant that the person would not have woken up, or do we assume in favor of the government that they would have woken up, since the CCA has not answered our question?
Ma'am, I believe that the way the government interprets what the CCA said was sort of looking at the second half of the Chiarito test. Is it reasonably likely this would have been observed even if somebody didn't actually see or didn't actually observe the act, that the you know, had he woken up, he would have actually seen it, but regardless of the fact that he didn't actually see it, it was reasonably likely that he would. So the government believes that it was reasonably likely that they were finding under his care that this was reasonably likely that somebody would have observed the act. I think the reference to had he been conscious or had he woken up addresses the fact that he didn't actually observe the act as addressed.
Well, I mean, if someone was in a coma, right? It'd be reasonably likely that if they woke up from a coma that, yes, they would observe it, but that doesn't answer the question as to how reasonable it is if they're going to wake up from a coma. Now, I understand that being passed out or being asleep is not the same thing as being in a coma, but do you understand my question when it comes to how to read the CCA?
Yes, ma'am, and I believe the proper focus in this or in the analysis under Izquierda seems to be not whether the third party would wake up and observe, but whether or not the appellant took steps to prevent a third party from being reasonably likely to observe. The criminality of conduct seems necessarily to rest upon the person being charged and not sort of the uncontrolled, you know, it's not under his control whether or not the petty officer wakes up in the middle of the afternoon. Not. So under Izquierdo, the step he took was to raise to put up the sheet, and that wasn't enough. In this case, the appellant didn't take any steps to ensure that if the petty officer woke up, he wouldn't have observed.
What is your position, if we assume that there was no third person in the room, what is your position as to whether this is constitutionally protected under Markham or otherwise?
Your Honor, I believe there are still military factors that pertain to this. Now, part of the military factor is that the third person who was in the room, his relationship to the two individuals, as far as being the supervisor of one of them, being on the same boat. So I think his presence sort of plays into both prong two and prong three. But the fact that other members of the unit were in other rooms. There was the fireman who was outside the door when Fireman B got up and ran outside looking for a phone to call the police. The relationship of the individuals themselves and to the submarine crew and the nature of service on a submarine certainly seems to bring the conduct within the third prong.
The appellant already answered the question that there was no order or regulation prohibiting fraternization or dating or whatever among members of the submarine crew. Is it because there are no women on the submarine crew, or do you know?
I don't know for sure, but that would be my guess.
So is it your position that if instead of, that if this had been a man and a woman instead of two men, that the same analysis would pertain?
Absolutely, Your Honor. The Article 125 doesn't characterize either homosexual or heterosexual sodomy. It criminalizes the conduct subject to the Lawrence v. Texas and U.S. v. Markham analysis.
Can you point me to any case, any reported case by any CCA involving a situation like this where it's consensual sodomy between a man and a woman that's charged and prosecuted in this manner?
Under Article 125, as far as the CCA, I'm not sure.
Thank you.
With the asking the same questions in the legal context, who has the burden of proof in this case? Is it the government, because the government has potentially charged someone with a constitutional conduct, or is it the appellant because he's contesting the nature of his plea? What is your view?
Your Honor, the appellant, because he didn't challenge this issue, he didn't raise this issue at trial. The guilty plea proceeded, as per the bench book and a regular inquiry, because this issue was never raised. And so the fact that it is sparse and that the facts aren't on the record, the burden seems to fall more on the appellant to show that that this was unconstitutional or that it's constitutionally protected behavior, since he raises this now when the record's already been made.
With respect to the information, facts, and context that it was presented on sentencing, the appellant takes the view that that information is not either admissible or relevant to the determination whether the conduct was constitutionally protected under the Lawrence liberty interest. What is the government's view as to that issue?
Aaron,
why are the sentencing facts in or out?
Your Honor, the sentencing facts should be considered because although the Providence inquiry has to cover the elements of the offense, when you're examining this for the constitutional liberty interests, it is appropriate to examine the circumstances as a whole and to look at the fact that although he pled guilty to and was convicted of a consensual offense, that there are other stronger military factors shown in sentencing than were available on the Providence inquiry.
Counsel, as I understood your answer to Judge Ryan's question, it's that Article 125 is constitutional in the government's view, and that all acts described therein can be constitutionally prosecuted, and that there is no liberty interest that's protected under Lawrence that would apply in the armed forces. Is that correct?
No, Your Honor.
Well, then what circumstances would a person have a protected liberty interest under Lawrence that would preclude a prosecution under Article 125?
Homosexual or heterosexual sodomy committed in the privacy of one's own home with two consensual participants, such as occurred in Lawrence v. Texas, would absolutely be constitutionally protected.
Two service members?
Unless there were other prongs, such as in Markham or Starwell, that affect military interests in the way that occurred in this.
And how do we know that that's the line that should be drawn? That is, you've asserted that particular line, but what distinguishes that line from a situation in which you have two service members in a government quarters?
In other words, if
you have a male and a female engaging in the acts described in Article 125 in transient quarters, not in the privacy of their own home, why is that in or out under Article 125?
Well, Your Honor, as this Court said in Markham, these cases have to be examined individually. So if you have, for example, two service members of equal rank who are staying in a room, they've closed the door and excluded all other members of the public, then certainly it seems that it would fall within protected on those facts.
What if there's people in the room next door that are military members, or people outside the room, which are two of the factors that you used in this case?
Yes, sir. Well, Ms. Chiarito seems to suggest, at least on the public-private factor, that once you're in the room by yourself, it's certainly on the private side. But the military factors can still come into play if these are members of a unit, a small, tight-knit unit that has to operate. And as in this case, one of the participants at the conclusion makes a complaint that this was coerced instead of consensual, and then involves members of the chain of command, cannot return to duty. Those type of factors, whether it's male or female or male and male, would seem to implicate Mark.
Why are those factors that should be subject to the charge, if not the statute at issue? That is, if the distinction between what is criminal and what is not criminal has to do with public-private, has to do with military factors, why not require a charging in those cases so that when a person pleads guilty or is found guilty, they're found guilty of a specific offense? That is, he was charged in this case, the first charge, specifically charged the conduct of the indecent conduct. But here, it appears that the Court of Criminal Appeals affirmed a finding of guilty of sodomy with indecent conduct, a charge of which was not subject to the specification itself or the underlying statute.
No, Your Honor, we're in a sort of a particular situation here because Lawrence v. Texas infuses this analysis that isn't represented in the elements. So he was charged properly under the elements of the offense, but in order to plead guilty or be found guilty, these other Lawrence v. Texas or Markham prongs have to be present. So although it doesn't need to be charged, it certainly needs to be that needs to be the basis for a guilty finding.
But here, the judge made no inquiry on either one of those matters. He asked a number of questions proposed by the trial counsel, but at no point did he explain to the accused what the significance of the presence of a third person was, or that whether that would determine whether his activity was or was not criminal. And the military judge made no inquiry as to any of the prong three factors. So how do we get a provident guilty plea in this case?
Well, Your Honor, the record does reflect facts that show that that pertain to the public-private issue as well as to the military prongs, although the judge didn't expressly ask the appellant whether he believed that that fact made him guilty under Lawrence v. Texas. The facts are still on the record. So the trial counsel clearly knew what the factors were that were necessary, and he ensured that the judge asked the questions that put the facts on the record. So
counsel, can I try it a slightly different way?
Yes, ma'am.
Let's assume that under Markham and under Lawrence that Article 125, a charge of consensual sodomy, okay, that there is no, that it is not criminal unless, okay, that it's not criminal unless one of the prong three factors for Markham is met, okay? So without one of those prongs, would you agree that there's no crime and there's no sentence?
Without either one of the Lawrence v. Texas prongs or the military factors, then yes, it would seem to be protected behavior.
Okay, and so why then wouldn't the prong aspect need to be placed in the charge because it's only that fact that allows them to be punished at all under Apprendi? I think that's what the Chief Judge is asking.
Mayor, I'm not prepared to answer that question, but I can submit a supplemental brief on the issue.
With respect to the question I asked the defense, then
would it be useful for you to consult with co-counsel on the Apprendi question? It does seem to go to the core of what the appellant is arguing.
Your Honor, I'll submit a supplemental brief if that's acceptable.
Just on that, the court will consult and determine whether to issue an order in that regard, and you'll have whatever other privileges you have to submit a motion if you don't hear from the court. Now, with respect to the question that I asked the defense, then it would appear from your answer that your view is that Article 125 is unconstitutional if the showing is not made under the two Markham factors after the liberty interest is invoked. Is that the government's view?
And the government's view is that in order to ensure that Article 125 is not attempting to criminalize protective behavior, there has to be a showing that the behavior is accepted from what's protected either by reference to the Lawrence v. Texas prong or factors or the Markham military factors.
And so that would that then follow that 10 U.S.A. 64, in your view, has no bearing on this court's consideration as to whether Article 125 would be unconstitutional in those situations?
Absolutely, Your Honor. I mean, this Article 125, again, doesn't address the gender or the policy administrative issues reflected in that statute. This is purely whether or not the sodomy conduct is protected or whether it falls outside of that protection.
Is voyeurism constitutionally protected? May it be? I'll put it that way.
It perhaps is, Your Honor, although Lawrence v. Texas certainly doesn't go that far. Lawrence v. Texas confines its holding to the facts of that case and repeated statements talks about this is between two people in the privacy of their home.
Well, I don't want you to get into penumbras and emanations, but say you've got a private house off base in which two members of the armed forces are engaging in constitutionally protected fornication. Leave aside what sex either one of them is. And there is a third party present, conscious, who likes to watch that kind of thing. Everyone is over 21, and everyone agrees.
Would that be protected, Your Honor?
Yeah. What do you think?
Not necessarily, Your Honor, and it depends, again, on the military aspect of this.
Let's say they're all the same grade. They're all E3s.
There's still an interest the military may have, Your Honor, in making sure that members of a unit don't gather and engage in sexual conduct. And if it's three, is that okay if it becomes four or five? I mean, there's...
Well, I purposely kept it at three. You know, I'm not talking about two people engaging in fornication in a boxing ring with 500 people around.
Yes, Your Honor, but there are still aspects to the military culture and to military services, as has been expressed by this court in Markham and in several other cases, that make us different than the civilian world. So while three civilian co-employees engaging in that type of behavior might be constitutionally protected, there's just a different analysis when determining what's public and what's private in the military, and that's why the government thinks that this court's
I thought you were saying not that it wasn't private, but that it was that. Are you saying it's prong two or three or both?
It can be both, Your Honor, and I guess that's the point.
Are you saying it is, or are you saying you don't? You're trying to answer the question without taking a view.
Let's
be very clear. Are you saying it is constitutionally protected? It is not constitutionally protected, or I need more facts to determine that.
Your Honor, because...
Which more facts do you need then?
Well, the military factors, Your Honor, that's what U.S. v. Markham seemed to say, is that it has to be looked at in an individual basis, and so it's difficult to tell on those facts what the military interests or implications may be. And again, although in Markham, this court used the military regulation to inform prong two, so government doesn't believe that prong two and prong three are necessarily separated as to the military interests involved, and that the military application or interest can also decide what is public versus private, as well as sort of the general military interests involved in the conduct in general.
My recollection about Izquierdo is that Izquierdo was charged with rape and was found not guilty of rape but guilty of the lesser included offense under Article 134 based on Miller, Medina, and Jones. That case is of somewhat questionable validity anymore. What of Izquierdo remains valid at this point?
Where the determination of what is open and notorious and public is not disturbed by the fact of how they got there on the lesser included offense question in that case. So Izquierdo came from Berry and Snyder in those cases where the analysis was, how do we separate what is criminal conduct from what is wholly private conduct? And in Izquierdo, the test that was provided was that it was reasonably likely that somebody would observe the act, whether they actually do or not. And that seems to still be valid, especially in light of indecent exposure cases out of this court and others that discuss the difference between public and private conduct. In that private or public conduct can be public without being in a public place, can be in a private home and still be considered public. In this case, the presence of the petty officer made this public conduct despite the nature of it or the location being in a at least somewhat private temporary lodging.
Counsel, we didn't give you an opportunity to give your opening statement, but please feel free to take the time you need in your closing statement to incorporate whatever you would have opened with if you would choose to do so now.
Thank you, Your Honor. Berry and Izquierdo remain good law after Lawrence v. Texas because their tests were developed in order to distinguish private sexual conduct from criminal conduct. And while Lawrence expanded the type of sexual conduct that was protected, it didn't change the analysis of public conduct or grant greater protection to sexual conduct in general than what previously existed. The government asks this court to recognize that under both prongs 2 and 3 of United States versus Markham, appellants, conduct in this case falls outside of constitutionally protected behavior and was properly prosecuted, is properly convicted under Article 125.
Thank you, counsel. Does the defense have rebuttal?
No, I don't. Can I ask you a question then?
The defense has rebuttal.
There seems to be thematically two strands to your argument. One is that the conduct in question was constitutionally protected, and the other is that to the extent it's not constitutionally protected, the elements that made it criminal were not proven. Now, with respect to the first aspect of that, could you please characterize what the constitutional right in this case is as applied to these facts, using the facts?
Absolutely, Your Honor. It's the exercise of liberty under the Due Process Clause. So because the facts are unclear, either the situation is...
Take the facts as you see them. Go ahead.
He's
Please
present.
Put your liberty interest into factual context by using the facts.
Yes, Your Honor. The third party is president and either doesn't care or is unlikely to see it. If he's unlikely to see it, then it's private and it's simply the exercise...
So you have a constitutional right to have consensual adult sex in front of third parties provided they're not likely to observe it. Is that
that, you would that would be a characterization of the conduct as private under this court's test under the United States versus Izquierdo. That's not an extension of Lawrence versus Texas. The extension would be that the consent issue, because Lawrence versus Texas is about the personal autonomy cases and the rights of people to exercise, the right of people to exercise.
Just say in your own words what the constitutional right is. If you are writing the appellate decision using the facts of this case, please state what the constitutional right is.
The appellant and his partner had the right to engage in the sexual conduct to form a personal bond that is more lasting and enduring, is the way they term it in Lawrence, which is a bit flowery, but it is about the decision of people to engage in and create bonds through sexual conduct, be they two people or three people. You know?
Be they three, and that's how you define the facts of this case?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, the facts of this case are completely unclear, obviously.
You do agree that there's a third party in the room?
Absolutely, Your Honor, yes. And
is the constitutional right? How would you characterize the constitutional right vis-a-vis that third party?
Well, it is private sexual conduct in the sense that he's not reasonably likely to wake up.
Okay, so that's how you... And then with respect to the elements question, you're saying, I believe, and you can say, no, I'm not arguing that. I believe you're arguing that the elements that made this offense criminal, if criminal at all, were not proven beyond a reasonable doubt or were not alleged, or what's the argument there?
They were neither alleged nor proved beyond reasonable doubt.
Yet. Now, how does the fact that this is a plea change or not change that circumstance?
It changes it in the sense that the appellant needed to plead to the facts that are necessary to sustain the conviction, given the fact that there's some constitutional question, which I say I'm out of time, Your Honor.
You can answer the question.
Given the fact that there's a constitutional question raised by the trial counsel and the defendant in this case, it was clearly brought forward and brought to the attention of the military judge. In fact, the trial counsel said, I think that we need to ask some more questions, otherwise we're going to run afoul of the Constitution.
Thank you.
Can I ask one question?
Thank you for your rebuttal that you've been preparing for.
My pleasure.
Counsel, if the facts were that the individual was reasonably likely to wake up, do you agree or disagree that there's no constitutional right for the other two to forge a sexual bond in the presence of a third person?
I think that's correct, Your Honor. If that other third person was likely to object to it, that would need to be proved as well, Your Honor. I think Lawrence versus Texas was about personal autonomy, and if these three people, for example, Judge Stuckey's question was, you know, could a third person watch? The Constitution could protect that if those people wanted to choose to cement their lives together in that particular fashion, Your Honor. So I think that it needs to be looked at.
But then you're saying the constitutional right is to have consensual adult sex in front of a third party, unless you demonstrate that the third party objects?
Yes, Your Honor. I mean,
that's your constitutional right. So unless, okay.
Asserted that Izquierdo doesn't survive Lawrence and Markham, so Izquierdo, by your definition, is out. So what's left?
The idea that it's reasonably likely to be seen can be used in terms of public or private. If you add on a particular element regarding whether or not that third person that would view the conduct is going to care, for lack of a better word. Essentially, if he's a participant in the activity, then it is...
Well, then by definition, he doesn't care. He wants it.
Yes, Your Honor.
But you seem to be arguing not that case, but that the constitutional right extends to, and this has nothing to do with case law, this has to do with Lawrence extension, that the constitutional right extends to having the constitution of the Lawrence sex in front of a third party, not knowing that they're part of it, but without knowing whether they're part of it, just regardless.
Well, I don't think that's necessarily correct. I mean, the idea is that in this particular case, the evidence is insufficient to show that he would object to it. Yes, Your Honor. The having to get affirmative consent every time would be a difficult task.
So then you say Lawrence Wright absent evidence that the person would object.
Correct, Your Honor. In a criminal prosecution, no.
Counsel, to clarify, is it your argument that we need to decide in this case that Lawrence should be either interpreted or extended to include the third-party observance, or are you arguing that in the alternative to the argument that since the individual was not demonstrated to be anything more than asleep, I'm not making that argument, understand your argument there, that therefore it was done in private? That is, are you making one argument, or are you making arguments in the alternative?
In the alternative, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel.
Yeah.
We thank both counsel for your presentation today. The case is now submitted, and the court will be in recess until 10 minutes before 10 o'clock.
Court stands in recess until 9:50.